is Friday, May 10th, 1991. Time is 8:43. We have on the agenda today letters of report on confirmation for Mr. Jack Anderson, Commissioner Designated, Alaska Public Offices Commission, and letter of report for confirmation of Millet Keller, Commissioner Designated for Department of Administration. We have House Bill 198 relating to legislative session to be in Mat-Su Borough. House Bill 308 relating to adoption emergency regulations. House Bill 155 relating to barrier-free remodeling funds. House Bill 157 relating to appropriation of barrier-free facility fund. And H.J.R. 41 relating to MIA POW American Service Personnel. This time I'd like to take up H.J.R. 41 relating to H.J.R. 41 by the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, a resolution relating to missing American service personnel. H.J.R. 41 urges the U.S. Congress to appoint a select committee to help obtain information on missing American service personnel and to take action to enact a POW-MIA truth bill. From Viben's office, Mr. Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your taking the time to hear this resolution, especially with the busy agenda that this committee is facing. I'm glad to see all the interest of everyone in support by showing up today. House Joint Resolution 41 was introduced by the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs to recognize that POW-MIAs probably still exist in Southeast Asia. The resolution requests, as you stated, Mr. Chairman, the Congress increase the federal government's involvement in locating POW-MIAs from the Vietnam, Laos, and Korean wars. Other states are passing similar resolutions. In 1990, the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee released an interim report that concluded that American service personnel were held in Southeast Asia after the end of the Vietnam conflict, and that information available to the U.S. government does not rule out the probability that American service personnel are still being held. In fact, the Department of Defense has received more than 11,700 live sighting reports of POW-MIA since 1973. 1,400 of those are firsthand live sighting reports, and the department admits there are a number of unresolved and discrepancy cases. Resolution requests Congress to appoint a select committee to assist in the obtaining of information in government files on missing American service personnel, urges Congress to begin committee hearings immediately to consider enacting the POW-MIA Truth Bill, that's H.R. 1147, introduced by Representative John Miller of Washington, and request Congress to continue funding its investigation into the status of missing American service personnel in an effort to resolve the POW-MIA situation in Southeast Asia. That's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? The record should show that we have a quorum present by Representatives Baker, Choquette, Moyer, and Kabina. Questions from the committee? Comments?
No question, Mr. Chairman, but I would move the bill and ask for individual recommendations.
No comments on the bill? I think this is a very good resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And the chairman for bringing it forward to the body. Is there any objections to moving? Any objections to motion to move CS for H.J.R. 41? Hearing no objections, CS for H.J.R. 41 is moved with individual recommendations. Next item before us is House Bill 198 by Representative Carney, an act relating to the location of the convening of the legislature in regular session. House Bill 198 proposes to move the legislative session to the Mat-Su Borough. Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for hearing this this morning. I am Representative Pat Carney, sponsor of House Bill 198. House Bill 198 was introduced to allow the legislature to hold sessions closer to the majority of Alaskans. Nearly two decades ago, the people of Alaska voted to relocate the capital, yet the legislature continues to meet in Juneau. A capital move is unnecessary. The decision to relocate the legislative sessions is long overdue. It makes no sense for our legislature to meet in an area that is inaccessible to the majority of our residents, except by air. The Madison Susitna Valley is a logical choice for relocation. It's an hour's drive from Anchorage and on the rail belt with an easy access to Fairbanks and the interior. The Madison Borough has agreed to provide a building with 140,000 square feet of space. We currently are using about 90,000 square feet, Mr. Chairman. The borough would lease the building at cost with title reverting to the state after the revenue bonds have been retired. The rental per square foot would be much less than rent for current office space in Juneau. Our capital building would be used for state office. Included with this packet is a memo from Linda Snow detailing the fiscal impact of moving the legislature. I think you've probably all seen that. There are a few problems with her analysis. Included in the cost of the initial move is the cost of remodeling the office space or the space that would be used for offices here in the Capitol building. This cost should be considered as an ongoing overhead item offset by rent. Ms. Snow also arrived at a figure of $2.25 per square foot rental based on a comparable privately owned for-profit Anchorage commercial property. The intent of this proposal and the commitment on the part of the Mat-Su Borough is to rent the space at cost, approximately $1.25 per square foot. This will decrease the total per year rental by about $1.4 million. The figure that's shown on her analysis then would be quite a bit less. The legislature can meet in South Central Alaska in a building with an additional 60,000 square foot of space without significantly increasing cost per year. This is not taking into consideration the tremendous savings to the public in travel. And Mr. Chairman, I think you probably have another fiscal note, which I don't have, from the Office of Budget Management, I think.
No. Environmental Conservation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That completes my testimony. If there are any questions.
Chairman, I don't have a copy of the fiscal note Representative Carney spoke of.
There is no fiscal note. We're not having very good luck having cooperation from the administration. I requested fiscal notes from every department because obviously this legislation would affect every department. We did receive a fiscal note from DEC and of about Representative Carney.
Mr. Chairman, I guess if the one department here is $60,000 basically for DEC, it would seem that other departments would be consistent with that. So even if you take the 15 departments, you're still only talking $700,000, and your savings is quite significant, just if you consider it in that fashion. If this one department is a model, which
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another point that I wanted to make about the fiscal notes are that they don't take into consideration the travel that goes in the other direction now. They only take into consideration the travel that would be involved in the future. And I don't know how a person could arrive at those figures of the amount of money being spent now and people going from one back and forth. Thank you. Thank you.
Other questions, Representative Carney? How do you envision the governor's office being affected by this?
I haven't seen very much this year, Mr. Chairman. All we hear is what happens at the third floor. I suspect that I know you've been back to Anchorage quite a few times. In fact, one of the things that concerns me is what happens if we lose a plane one of these days and there's half a dozen legislators or a governor going back and forth between the center population. I think that's a serious consideration that a lot of people like to forget. But it is, I think, it's pretty potentially serious possibility.
Has there ever been a plane crash here in Jenner?
Sure.
How long ago was that?
120 people aboard.
1971. I guess my question to you, though, is the governor's office obviously is in and out of here all the time, not necessarily him himself, but his people. How would you say that's going to work? Would you expect the governor to have to move up there during these 4 months and his staff? Well, or
Mr. Chairman, I know the governor has an office in Anchorage. I know that most commissioners, most departments have offices for the commissioners in Anchorage. They have duplicate offices. The commissioner of Department of Natural Resources has an office up there. I think most of the departments have offices that they operate out of and have staff too.
In the frontier.
And that's why I think that we've already moved every section of government that needs to be moved to the center of population except the legislative sessions. We already have duplications. That's why I don't think it's necessary to move the capital. That's why I think that just moving the legislative sessions is something that can work with today's technology. You had a situation here a few weeks ago where you did a teleconference on a bill. In fact, it was the day my bill was scheduled, where you had not only teleconference, but you had visual. And that's the thing, that's a coming thing. And that's going to be more common as time goes on, so you'll be able to actually see the people that are testifying as well as talking to them. So I think we have the ability to conduct business in another location than Juneau and still maintain the capital in Juneau. I like the idea.
So the communication is not a reason to move the legislative session, in other words. That's what you're saying.
Accessibility by people is the reason to move the capital. No. The cost of coming to Juneau to testify for people where the heaviest center of the population is extreme. You know, you think in terms of $100 a night plus the cost of travel. You come down here to hope to attend a meeting. People that are here today attended a meeting here a few weeks ago. People in my district can't come back. They were here the other day. They can't come back. It's too expensive. So they're on teleconference. I think people should have an opportunity to be personally here if it's possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I draw this committee's attention back when Governor Egan was here. He had a standing rule that none of the commissioners left town during the session. Just as a point of information, I've tried to get two commissioners in the last couple days, and they're both out of town for the week. I draw that into perspective.
Other questions, Representative Carney?
I'd just like to hear the testimony.
Representative Carney, would you like to join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe over here in case Representative Brooklyn gets here. Representative Miller has a broken foot, so doesn't make too many meetings. I'd like to take teleconference sites first. Anchorage, are you online? Anchorage, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joseph Henry. Is this the time to say my piece?
Mr. Henry, would you state your address, please, and your who you're representing, if anyone?
Name is Joseph Henry. My address is 9921 Near Point Drive, Anchorage, Alaska. I'm just here on my own behalf, not representing anybody else. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm testifying against House Bill 198. I'm sorry to see this matter raised one more time. Alaska has been embroiled in capital move business since Merritt Starr first started this in 1960. He passed from the scene in the earth, and Frank Harris undertook the issue in his stead. Frank Harris is gone, too. Now we're at it again, and however you want to describe it, it surely is a capital move. And I heard someone testify how the governor's people, that is the executive branch, is before the legislature constantly. And indeed, to do anything worthwhile in our tripartite government, or at least the executive and the legislative departments have to work very, very closely together, not the judicial, but it would be extremely poor to try to separate them. So I think if it were the will of Alaskans that the legislature be located to the Matsu borough, then the executive branch chiefs would surely have to follow. It's very foolish to think that that wouldn't be the case, and government isn't very efficient as it is set up now with everybody in the same bullpen, so to speak. But if it had to be separated like that, why handicap ourselves like that? Why tie one hand behind our back like that? I think the answer is obvious, that the executive would have to follow and come along. But I know of no American state that's separated its legislature from the executive branch into two different distant cities. One South American country has done that, and that is Chile, when the military dictator Pinochet ran the country. He dismissed the legislature out of Santiago, the capital, down to Valparaiso, because under the dictatorship, the legislature was not a vital part of government. But our legislature is a vital part of our government, and the executive and the legislative branches ought to be kept cheek by jowl, side by side, and that there's just too much daily contact, daily meshing that has to be done. And I can speak, Mr. Chairman, as a landowner and land developer of the Matanuska borough. I've gone through the heat of the day on the recession like a lot of other people have, and I understand that this would be one way to generate a little economy in Matsu somewhere. It's a big place. But I wouldn't be for doing that at the expense of another part of Alaska, namely Juneau borough, taking the economy from Juneau and putting it into Matsu would be a very unfriendly thing. It would be a gash in the a horror in our Alaska public life that we wouldn't get over for a generation if we got over it then. So, we shouldn't stiletto any of our fellow Alaskans in the interest of bettering the economy somewhere else, which I believe this would do. I would just ask the committee to not do this to our state one more time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Representative Shilkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Henry, you're speaking on teleconference now, and you've been listened to by the committee. I was here last week when we had a person on teleconference pretty strongly sway this committee on a vote one way or another. Just what value do you give teleconferencing or being able to connect with the other areas in the state on bills such as this?
Well,
questions to the committee? Thank you, Mr. Henry. Is Ernie, Ernie Paul here? Ernie, would you take the stand? And then we'll be going to Matsu next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ernie Pauley. I reside at 634 West 12th, Juneau, and I'm representing myself today on House Bill 198. I have spoken to you in the past, I guess, on other issues, but it's always been on behalf of some of others. And I suspected as I was drafting my comments that I may be doing so again today, but that would be a matter, I suppose, of presumptive conjecture. But for the record, I am simply before you as a citizen of Alaska and only incidentally as a resident of the city and borough of Juneau. As you probably suspect, I am speaking in opposition to House Bill 198. Since this bill was introduced, my thoughts and feelings on the matter have gone through several stages. My initial reaction, quite frankly, was one of denial. I simply could not believe that anyone would resurrect this issue in any meaningful sense. After I finally had to come to grips with the fact that it had been resurrected, of course, I would be less than candid if I did not tell you that my next stage of reaction was one of frustration and anger. But finally, perhaps out of empathy for the individual human beings which serve in the legislature, I had to look at this matter with as much dispassionate analysis as I could muster. And as long as I'm in my empathetic mode and before I reach any potential need to move into my final stage, which I describe always as is largely based on blood oath commitments and unborn generations of Pauleys dedicate themselves to a program of vengeance. I had to admit that if I was sitting on your side of the table, I could always take comfort in the fact that the bill could have been worse. The sponsor could have figured out a way to roll in the National Rifle Association and abortion rights. But for those of you who did not have the distinct displeasure of living through this issue in prior times, let me mention a few salient points. Setting aside for the moment the immediate and human issues, let me talk about some political facts of life. I'm going to pretend while I'm doing this, by the way, that we're holding these conversations personally and privately. But you and I both know within the complexities of Alaskan politics that South Central has a real problem. If that area of the state ever figured out a way to exercise every bit of inherent juice, political juice, they could own the state top to bottom, politically speaking. But you and I both know, I would suggest, that if that ever happens, it would result in the long term in regional political warfare and paranoia that would go far beyond anything we have ever experienced today. The enormous, albeit potential, political power of the Anchorage Kenai Lower Rail Belt complex is, I would suggest to you, a diamond-studded, fragrant, and alluring bit of political poison. The rest of the state fears the inherent political power from this region. As a consequence, in the past, the wisest and most more statesmanlike politicians from South Central, the elected officials, those that have a genuine fear for the well-being of the state all the way from Barrow to Hyder, know that political harmony, even when it's strained by regional differences, depends on never exercising the full potential of the political power in South Central. Now, you and I also know, I would suggest, that the reality of political life is the unreal nature of appearance over substance. And I can assure you that nobody is going to buy the notion that South Central Alaska doesn't own the entire political system if you move the legislature to the valley. Reality would indicate, of course, the real facts that I think that, looking back over the years, that there isn't anything that South Central likes better than a good fight with South Central, but it ain't going to be perceived that way in the hinterlands. And while it personally dismays me at times, genuinely dismays me at the very deepest level, the fact is that we are not a single state, even when we are on our very best behavior, we're a minimum of four states. The ability of our regions to work together, given that reality, the environment in which one Alaskan feels welcome when they appear in another Alaskan's environment, regardless of regional residence, is largely based on the genuine belief that nobody owns the system.
Okay.
That everybody's got a piece of the action. Now, so much for the our private conversation, some other facts, political and otherwise. You know, for the jillionth time, and this has been said over and over and over again, it doesn't make any difference where the capital of the legislature resides. No matter where it is, it's a long ways away from somebody. And I find it interesting that the argument that it, quote, ought to be closer to the people, unquote, comes from the minds of people who are either in some sort of political minority over the years or who argue, evidently, that the heartfelt view of an individual citizen is of less value than 20 foaming-at-the-mouth constituents in their election district. I find it interesting that the hidden message being expressed by certain legislators over the years is that perhaps their ineffectiveness can be blamed on the fact that their true believers can't physically throttle the bad guys who don't represent the real people. In short, I think there's a good deal of populist argument that goes on in relation to this issue that does not bear scrutiny, close or otherwise. And I have reviewed the Legislative Affairs Fiscal Note on this proposal and would agree that it is a conservative estimate of cost. I would suggest that it is conservative to the point that it not only strains credulity, it ruptures it beyond repair. While the question is admittedly rhetorical, can anyone possibly imagine the situation caused by the executive branch residing in one community and the legislative branch in another? If anyone should think for one moment that every major and minor office in the executive branch would not have a headquarters in the nearest Motel 8, and that there would not be a permanent open phone and fax line to the Capitol, then I would suggest that they're deluding themselves. Is the governor and governor's staff to remain in Juneau? But you don't have to respond to that. You may have individual feelings about that matter. But I just want to point out that communication between the two branches are always difficult. Even under the best of circumstances, imagine, if you will, the two branches separated by 700 miles of geography. So as a practical matter, this is not a bill to move the legislative session. This is a bill to move the Capitol. I'd like to conclude by speaking briefly about the community. I'm going to say, I guess, in front of God and everybody, that there have been days when I wished you would move the Capitol because of some of the people that would go with you. And there have been days, when some of my fellow residents have made me incredibly angry with what I can only describe as a smug and well-fed complacency. But then I remember what happened in the years prior to the last Capitol move vote and what it was like in this town in recent years when there was a threat of a major layoff. As usual, it wasn't the smug and complacent that got hurt. It was a whole bunch of little people, both in the private and public sector. The fear in this town was pervasive like a noxious odor. The psychological and resultant real impact was far beyond anyone's projections, quantitative projections, in terms of a dampening of the spirit to risk and the local economy. It was a malaise of the worst kind because it was based on uncertainty and conjectural threat. It hurt people who have little or no say in these matters. It was another case of Alaska feeding on itself. Capital moves, regardless of their fine clothing, do not put more oil in the ground at Prudhoe. These political movements do not improve safe water and sewer in smaller communities. They do nothing to solve our problems in financing and structuring a more successful system of public education. They do not help the Alaska business entrepreneur. They do not repair your roads and highways. They do not facilitate a more productive relationship with the federal government. And they do not help communities deal with the burden of growing infrastructures and limited resources. Bills such as House Bill 198 do little except fuel the fires of internecine warfare. and I dread another such experience. I would suggest to you, if I might, that we have much more formidable and real problems that are going to require a sustained collective effort, an effort which will require Alaskans to join hands all across the state. I think the citizens and legislators alike are going to have to put their collective intelligence and energy into solving problems rather than creating them. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Did you say Motel 8? That was a capital test?
Such a deal.
Yeah, or the nearest.
Representative Choquette?
Mr. Chairman, he has written a copy of his testimony. Could we have
that? Yes, could we have a copy of that?
I'd be pleased to.
Please.
Thank you.
Tom, could you see if you could get a small chair or something outside so Representative Mackey could join us? The record should also show we've been joined by Representative Grunberg and Bruckman. I'd like to call the mayor of the Juneau Borough, Mr. Bortello. Excuse me, Mayor, I should have called on you first, and I apologize. Being an outsider here in your fair city, I didn't recognize you as the mayor right off the bat, and I should have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I take no umbrage at it at all. It's a pleasure to be able to address you on this important issue. Obviously, I am speaking on behalf of the citizens of the city and borough of Juneau, many of whom are gathered here, and as you can see, they represent a broad cross-section of our community. I'm sure that I, without contradiction, can say all of us are here to express our opposition to House Bill 198. I have three specific concerns that I wish to bring to your attention. First of all, as an Alaskan, as a Juneauite, I'm troubled by the prospect of moving the Capitol, or as it is clothed in House Bill 198, the legislative function of the Capitol. Juneau has committed itself to serving the people of Alaska and its elected representatives in every way possible, and I believe that, again, without contradiction, Juneau has acquitted itself well in that regard. The second point I'd like to make is that there are a few precedents for the division of the seat of government into two locations, one for the executive branch and one for the legislative branch. Mr. Henry of Anchorage has already identified one such example, that of Chile. The second that I'm familiar with and wish to call to your attention is that of the Republic of South Africa, in which the parliament sits in Cape Town each year beginning in February, but that the executive branch is headquartered in Pretoria, a distance not unlike the distance between Juneau and the Matsu Borough. Now, there are strong historic reasons for this division of authority, but I submit to you that it is the subject of widespread derision, in fact, national derision in South Africa, because the structure requires the annual transfer of the entire executive branch to Cape Town each February. That is, the cabinet officers, the highest-ranking civil servants, are required to be moved each year. The costs are horrendous, and that is really the focus of attention of the South African public on that very issue. There's requirement of parallel housing, not only for the administrative offices, but in addition, obviously, the housing requirements of individual public servants. And this brings me to my third concern, and that is that there be an accurate estimate of the fiscal impact of this legislation. I note that the Legislative Affairs Agency is, as the previous speaker, former Mayor Pauley, indicated, has identified itself as having given a conservative estimate. I think the language goes on to say that it may understate the actual expenses that might be incurred. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, given the dramatic impact of this bill on the fundamental operations of government in this state, I believe that you best serve the interests of the state of Alaska, the people of the state of Alaska, and this legislative body, if before advancing this bill to its next committee of referral, you undertake not a cursory, but a searching examination of the actual costs that might be incurred. I believe it's you best serve the public, you best serve the debate that will surely surround this bill as it moves in additional committees. I thank you for the opportunity to be able to address you today on this very important issue.
Thank you very much, Mayor. questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very much. Do we have anyone else online? George Rogers.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George Rogers. I reside at 1790 Evergreen Avenue in Juneau. I've been a resident of the state of Alaska for almost 45 years now. So I know the state very well, the territory before that. Like Casey Stengel said, this is deja vu all over again. I've lived through this. I don't want to live through another generation of the same thing. It is poisonous, as the previous witness has indicated. To us, to the whole state, it poisons the whole body politic. It ruins my old age. I'm looking forward to. But there's a very important thing about this. We did agree at the last referendum that would be the last attempt to move the capital. This is yet another rebirth of moving the capital. By definition, the capital is the city or town, the site of the seat of government. Now, if you move the legislature from the capital, you're moving a significant part of that government away from the capital. And there's no other way that you can accommodate this except to move the executive branch one way or another. You cannot have a divided capital. I'm not going to repeat what the previous witnesses have said. I want to talk a little bit about the function of the capital. When Bob Atwood launched the first capital move, he got very excited about Brazil's was in the process of moving the capital from Rio de Janeiro to Brasilia, a wilderness site. He sent reporters down to report on the glories of the architecture, the planning of a new city in the middle of the wilderness. This is what Alaska needed. Earlier than that, Australia had done very much the same thing. They'd moved their capital, the Commonwealth capital, from the largest city to a remote sheep country site. But Bob also sent down there to look at the beautiful Canberra, which was a beautiful architectural masterpiece. This was exciting newspaper coverage, but in June we were interested in why they did that. They already had their capitals where they were accessible to the majority of the people of both nations. Why did they move it there? So we asked questions. We found out there were very good reasons that had to do with what was the function of a capital. The capital is a place, it's a deliberative site. It's a site in which policy is made, with which legislation is passed. It is a site where legislation is passed looking at the nation or the state as a whole. And one of the reasons we got from both locations was that having the capital in the area where you had the largest population concentration, it was difficult to legislate and create policy for the nation as a whole. You were overwhelmed by the local policies. By the local problems, rather, by the local people coming in, that access. There is such a thing as over-access when you're dealing with a broad policy such as education for all Alaskans, public safety, and so on. The perspective was lost. And so they moved from the people to a remote wilderness area in Brazil and to sheep country in Australia. So they could look at things objectively. Now, this doesn't mean that they're out of contact. After all, we are a representative government in which the people here in the legislature, the governor, are elected by the people. This is not a direct democracy. It's too cumbersome to have that. We do have opportunities in hearings and teleconferences and so on. But the point was that in both these cases, the move was made away from the population center so the capital could function in the interest of all citizens of the nation, in the case of Alaska, all citizens of the state of Alaska. Moving the capital in this case, and I do equate moving the legislature with moving the capital, because it is the most important branch of government in my judgment, then you've done what Brazil and Australia were trying to correct. If you look at the states of the Union, you'll find that most of them have their capitals located away from the principal centers of government. This is not a population. This is not inertia. But, for example, in the state I was born in, California, it's not located at San Francisco or Los Angeles. It's located at Sacramento, a rather remote, now agricultural center. At one time, it was a gold mining center. It was the only ones at one time. But it was, again, the legislature convenes there and operates there. This does not mean that they do not have contact with the rest of the state directly and delivery of services and getting feedback from the people and in having offices so that the people can get access locally. The point is that there is no good logical reason for moving the capital. I'm not going to repeat anything further because other witnesses are going to pick up from this, but I just want to make that one point. We had at the time, or rather Bob Atwood kicked us up, and then after we did our investigation, dropped it, looked at what had happened in other places where they had done the moving the capital away from the pressures. But, and the other thing I want to make.
Questions in the committee? Thank you, Mr. Rogers. I did want to ask, is there anyone here from the administration prepared to talk on this bill? No. Okay, Carolyn Berg.
Carolyn Bird, and I've been a resident of Juneau for the last 30 years. My name is Carolyn Bird, and I've been a resident of Juneau for the last 38 years. And there are a few things that I've looked into, and this is one. When the capital move came up, I decided I was going to really look into it. So I started researching. And I found that Juneau is a permanent capital made so by Congress. And I found out that the people, when Congress makes a resolution, the people are in what Congress does. Therefore, the people, quote and unquote, cannot be in another vote of a state. And I'll read my statement here. Our capital at Juneau is a permanent capital that just exactly like Washington, D.C., as Congress made it a federal permanent capital in our Alaska Organic Law of August 24, 1912, where essentially Congress stated, the capital of the Territory of Alaska shall be at Juneau, Alaska, and shall be maintained there. Mandatory language. This made the situs of this capital federal and not state. As when Congress acts, quote, the people, unquote, are already in it and cannot be in it again by another vote of, quote, the people, quote, of a state. George Washington himself walked around and surveyed the national capital at Washington, D.C., and that land, as was Juneau's, was put under a United States patent and trust deed. And we have a copy of Juneau's trust deed from the recording office. The proper name of Juneau is not the city and borough of Juneau, but the municipality of Juneau. As was stated by Judge George Fulda in Beauchanan v. Sloven, private property or land under a United States patent, like you might have under your own home, does not change from territory to state. It remains the same. So there's no such thing as the removal of this permanent federal capital by a vote of the people of this state, when Congress already made it a permanent federal capital in 1912. The people cannot be in it twice, once by an act of Congress and another time by a vote of the people of a state. It is one or the other. Article 6, Paragraph 2, United States Constitution. All the millions of dollars spent on the capital move before were wasted. Juneau's capital remains a permanent federal capital, just exactly like Washington, D.C. Treaty with Russia, Articles 2 and 3. Holmes v. Jennison, 14 Peter, 540. 10th Amendment, United States Constitution. Respectfully submitted, Carolyn Berg. Any questions?
There are no questions for Carolyn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Next, I'd like to call on Linda Heinbergner, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Renda Heimbigner, and I reside at 5050 Tamarack Court here in Juneau, and I'm here today representing myself. I would like to address House Bill 198 on the presumption that it is what has been proposed, and that is an issue of moving the legislature in session. On that aspect alone, I would hope that you, as our elected officials, would look at the difficulties that this creates and recognize them to be not an answer to any difficulties currently in existence, and understand that, as in any relationship, it is a responsible nature to deal with the issues as they are and recognize that a more attractive alternative is not necessarily a more responsible or fiscally attractive one. Just on that issue alone, I would call your attention to the responsibility of the expenses that it would incur for the rest of the state. And I know that Representative Carney is representing his district, and I know that this is being presented in that aspect. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Heinbergner. I'm sorry, I mispronounced your name before. Next, I'd like to call on Chuck Ackberger, please. Is Chuck here?
Yes. Thank you for your time to speak. I've only been in Alaska 3 years. I came up here from Washington State, and for a time down there was involved with the government process in the capital of Olympia. Olympia is connected to Seattle with about 2 million people by about 80 miles of road, and I think at any given day we saw probably just about as much participation as you see here. One of the fundamental truths of politics is, as you see at the polls every time you run, the vast majority of the people don't vote. They don't get involved, and even a smaller majority actually tries to go down and work on anything except for those with a special interest or a problem they want solved. I don't know how many of you have had somebody just come in and say, "Hi, I'm in town, I just want to say you're doing a good job." They usually come down here because they want something. And when they want something, they don't mind paying the fare. I think the bulk of the people have elected you folks. They trust you. That's why they voted for you, and they think you can do the job without constant supervision by themselves individually. I think this would be a mistake. I'm against this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll go to the next witness, Jim Kohler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Kohler. I'm here representing not only myself, but I also serve as the Executive Director of the Juneau Economic Development Council. I would like to limit my comments to a couple of particular issues that some of which have been raised that I want to reinforce. Others I don't anticipate being raised in the context of the hearings this morning. First of all, I want to commend the chair of this particular committee for a statement very early in the process this morning, indicating that his own feeling is that a much more thorough analysis of the fiscal impact this legislation proposes be investigated. I cannot urge you enough to take a look at the full range of potential impacts that will be generated by moving the legislature, or as I think we can agree this morning, moving the capital from Juneau to the Matsu Borough. Not only do you have or do you need an agency-by-agency analysis of the costs of the impacts affecting them, but you need also to take a look at all of the indirect costs that admittedly have not been analyzed in the fiscal note that has been shared with the committee to date. If, in fact, this were a project proposed by a private sector developer, believe me, that private sector developer would have to be jumping through a whole range of hoops and studies and impact statements to be able to get the necessary permits and permissions to execute this particular action. I think that you need to follow the course that you, as well as the federal government, have set up and analyze what this action would cost you. You demand it of the private sector. I think you need to demand it of yourself. I am sure also that the Finance Committee would love to follow up on the representative's comments earlier this morning, Representative Carney, that this committee need not address the full fiscal issues, since the Finance Committee plays with the numbers and they're the ones most concerned. I think that would be an interesting process if in all committee hearings, in all legislation, that issues of finance simply be saved until they hit the Finance Committee. I obviously think that you don't wish to do that. You don't wish to pass out of this committee a piece of legislation that carries a range of fiscal impacts that you yourselves have not examined, so when you pass it out, it cannot pass the scrutiny of other committees that need to address it. The point that I think will not be raised by others this morning that I would like to leave you with: I have, for the last several years, been working in the arena of economic development. I've been doing that proudly on what I call the street level. I deal daily with individuals and developers across various industries, from transportation, to forest products, to mining, to tourism. And in all cases, I can tell you that if this legislation continues to even be considered, let alone passed, you will have minimally undermined and eroded, if not sabotaged, not only the efforts that we have undertaken, but the efforts that most economic development efforts or projects around the state have undertaken. Let me tell you that one of our most difficult tasks is finding, identifying, attracting, and involving the investment dollars and commitments in this state from outside into projects that will convert our economy from one of a federal colony to one of being an independent, standalone, competitive economy, not only in this country but throughout the world. Constantly what I get, and I've already started getting it over the last couple of weeks, from people not only in the Northwest but elsewhere who are aware this legislation is even pending at a committee level. Why, they ask, are you looking for ways of spending an enormous amount of state dollars to move your capital and then coming outside of the state and asking us to come in and invest in your infrastructure, the roads, the docks, the other kinds of transportation facilities that the state is desperately in need of, not only in Juneau and Anchorage and the Mat-Su borough, but across the state. As we talk, I heard 2 days ago from individuals in Atlin, just north of us in British Columbia. Just to put this in perspective, we have some mineral activity that exists within 8 miles of the border of Alaska into British Columbia. Very accessible to Alaska if, in fact, we can solve some transportation problems, a lack of them, between Juneau up the Taku River to the Canadian border. Already, the BC government is apparently flagging and staking road access from Atlin down to those particular sites. I dare say that if we choose to spend our dollars to relocate part of our government, in effect, we will have to move all of it. We are spending the kinds of capital dollars that we need to spend to be able to access the kinds of development projects that will feed our economy. The fiscal gap, we can all argue for the next few years in terms of when it's coming, but we all know it is coming. And if you choose to spend the dwindling state dollars on an issue like this, in effect, what you are saying, that it is more important for political reasons in terms of where you are sitting than the health and the growth of this economy that we're struggling for at a street level. The British Columbia government is also building a road. They have agreed to finance with a mining company access from the Canadian Highway into another massive mineral project area that to date has been fed by Southeast Alaska through hovercraft and air. We're still struggling to try to get the dollars committed so that we can connect that part of the western edge of British Columbia to the resource and service bases that are available in Alaska. But instead, we find ourselves trying to fight off the potential expenditure of dollars to do something like move the capital. I simply want to ask you, what is more important ultimately to the health of this state? Is it where you sit, or is it some of the issues that you need to tackle regardless of where you're sitting? I would rather have you stay in one place and make just a fraction of the dollars that you're anticipating spending available to the Economic Development Council in Juneau, to the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, to the various ARDRs throughout the state. Give us an opportunity to invest a few of those dollars in trying to make the economy more diversified and more healthy, so in fact we can continue the growth and the health that I think is possible for this state. That's what I would like to ask you to think about, and again, that's why I commend the chair to make sure that this bill doesn't advance beyond this committee without fully taking a look at what those fiscal impacts are, both direct and indirect. Without it, I think you're doing yourself a disservice, the state a disservice, and the ultimate future of this state, the most grievous kind of disservice that you could possibly execute. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler. Questions from the committee? Thank you, sir. Bill Potter.
Representative Gabina, members of the committee, my name is Bill Potter, and I am a resident of Juneau, and I'm speaking today as an individual. State has lots of stuff that needs to be done, and I think virtually everything else before the legislature is a higher priority than moving the legislature to the Mat-Su. From my own personal experience, I think, for instance, the funding of public education is much, much higher on the list than moving the legislature. Secondly, I've been a student of government for many years, and I know of no other government, either national government, state government, provincial government, prefecture government, where the legislature meets in some place other than the capital. It would be a first in the world, and I'm sure we would get worldwide attention for doing something that looks as ridiculous as that. That's on the surface of it. But in real life, this isn't really an issue of moving the legislature. I mean, I think it's a thinly disguised attempt to move the Capitol. And I live here. And like most people who work for a living or have worked for a living, my primary savings is the equity I have in my house. And if the Capitol is moved, that equity would disappear. And I think it would be inappropriate for the legislature to wipe out my life savings in such fashion. And then lastly, I think Juneau is a good capital city. I think Juneau has been good to the legislature. It's been getting better as the years go on. And there was a time when we perhaps were, as a community, were not as thoughtful as we could be, but we have become more and more thoughtful. And if there's something we're doing wrong, I think you ought to tell us, and we'll try and make it right. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Peter McDowell.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Peter McDowell, a resident of Juneau. And I would like to just share a little bit of my own background. As some of you know, I have served as a statewide official in the administration of the state of Alaska. And one of the things that became very clear to me during that time was that every legislator and every other official that operates in the Capitol is responsible for being statesmanlike or about all of their political and legislative activities. I would suggest that this bill is an example of crass regional chauvinism that's unbefitting an act for the Alaska legislature to even be considering. And I would strongly recommend that you discard it at this point. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Do you have a comment, Representative? You look like you want to say something.
I guess since you're going to offer me a chance, I will. I was wondering if the committee might consider amendment to the bill to move the Capitol to Craig.
Representative Mackey, before that amendment would get made, I would make amendment to move it to Cordova. But I don't think we're ready for amendments, but if you'd like to speak on the bill.
Well, I'll just be real frank and just go on record as being totally opposed to this. I mean, I'd like to have the Capitol move to my district too, but it's not in the cards. And I think Juneau is a good capital city, although I come from this region as well, from the southeast region. I don't get to go home at night either. I've been living in a hotel just like everybody else the last 4 months, and I haven't seen my family since January. I think there are more important issues in the state than to completely divide the state again and cause a controversy over a capital move, and that's exactly what this bill is. It's a capital move. So I'll be doing everything I can to oppose this bill in its entirety.
Thank you, Representative Mackey. Comments from the committee on Representative Mackey? Okay, I'm trying to debate how to do this. We are going on teleconference at 10 o'clock. That's all we have, but there was only a couple people on there, so we will continue here. Is Kay, and I'm sorry, I can't read, is it?
Debles.
Debles?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Kay Debles, and I'm a Juneau resident. I oppose House Bill 198 and feel it's impractical, unnecessary, and really just plain foolish, especially in this time of declining revenues. I supposed that the stated reason for this proposed change is to make the legislative process more accessible to more people. I've lived in Juneau 27 years, and I've been here testifying a few times. However, until today, I can't really recall any time that I have testified for myself. Instead, it's been for an organization And since I'm in Juneau, I'm handy. That's not to say I haven't been involved in the Juneau political scene. I served many years on the local planning commission, on the assembly, and I've been an active member of the local League of Women Voters. In addition, I chaired the first state salary commission. I tell you this to illustrate the fact that I might have been as likely as anyone to be up here testifying. And yet, as I said, I've been here as a local member of an organization, not as Josephine Public speaking out on an issue myself. It's always struck me that those outside Juneau who talk about access to the legislative process must assume that Junoites all run up to chat with their legislators, testify on bills, and generally hang around on a regular and frequent basis. And of course, as you all know, that's really just not so. Most of the city's citizens have probably never been here even to observe a legislative session. And that would be the same wherever the legislature holds its sessions. I have made much use of the telephone to get the information I seek. That access is available to everyone in the state. And now with the advent of easy access to fax machines, nobody even needs to go to their local legislative office or wait for the mail to get copies of bills. Teleconferencing has made travel to a legislative hearing unnecessary in many instances, as demonstrated with your hearing today. To think that the legislature can meet and discuss intelligently without ready access to people and records of state agencies sounds completely unknowledgeable. Or is that phase two? There are always calls for someone to come over to explain or justify or defend something in the state administration. I've been at committee meetings when it's happened, and I know from discussions with others that it's a common occurrence. How would that be possible with a changed legislative site? Holding legislative sessions outside of Juneau would appear to require suitable building as well as many other costs. This has got to be a many multi-million dollar project in an area when all manner of difficult choices are being made on programs we've all grown to love. It would seem to be an unwise use of limited resources to spend money unnecessarily. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there questions from the committee? Thank you, Ms. Dibble. John Carter. Mr. Carter.
Hey, John.
Carter, your address is not on here. Could you please state that clearly for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Carter. 3875 Seaview Avenue here in Juneau. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, other people testifying have done such a good job that I'm probably restating some things, but I will bore you with that. I'm a 32-year resident of the state of Alaska, and I came to Juneau from Anchorage 21 years ago to work for the legislature, as a matter of fact. I've watched several attempts to move the capital and find it hard to understand how responsible people can keep attempting to resurrect this issue. The argument of moving the legislature closer to the population base possibly made some sense years and years ago, but now with teleconferencing, as has been indicated, it seems that the only reason can be that some people would like to have the capital for their own district. It's an understandable reason, but certainly not a prudent reason when you consider the needs of the entire state. When every newspaper seemed to have something in it about how we need to cut the state budget because of the coming cut in oil production, and each of your districts have needs for things like roads, sewers, and schools, it seems very questionable to me that money should be spent so some legislators could be closer to their homes. As a business owner and homeowner in the Juneau area, I also think it is insensitive to continue the capital move hysteria. Each time one of you even whispers the capital move thought, the Juneau economy closes up overnight, and I can't overstate that. In the last capital move question, people said, oh, Juneau's economy will be fine, no problem. Well, I lived through that. Fine was not a good description. To give you just some idea of what impact this bill would have on Juneau's psyche, how would the people of Anchorage feel if suddenly both Elmendorf Air Force Base and Fort Richardson Army Base were both closed, and at the same time the oil industry in mass moved to Fairbanks? It wouldn't be a pretty picture, and that is exactly how we feel about this issue. It is a gut issue. It's where we live. It's how we live. Juneau has worked to make this capital that all Alaskans can be proud of, and if the reaction of the thousands of tourists that visit Juneau each year is any indication, it has become just that. Please be responsible and don't move this bill out of the committee. Opening this wound can't serve any purpose except for to disenfranchise a portion of the state. I was raised in the Anchorage area and in fact graduated from West High the year of the earthquake. I am no stranger to that part of the state, and I still don't believe it's the right place for the state capital. To move the capital to that area, many state capitals are not located in or around their largest cities, and I am not aware of regular attempts to move their capitals. In conclusion, please recognize this as an expensive, disruptive piece of legislation that should die right here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Questions from the committee? Thank you, sir. Sandy Williams? Mr. Williams, also your address is not on here. Could you please state that clearly?
My name is Sandy Williams, and I reside at 640 Fifth Street, Douglas. I'll touch base on a couple other issues that haven't been talked about here, I believe. I've lived in Alaska since 1959, Cordova, Anchorage, a little bit of time in Valdez, and most of my time here in Juneau. I spent 30 years with Department of Transportation and Department of Highways. I'm past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Alaska Section. At the last time the capital move issue came up, the Alaska Section ASCE spent a considerable amount of time studying the costs and effects of moving the capital. I would dare say thousands of hours to come in with some sort of rationale for a legitimate cost figure. I don't see that kind of effort available at this time, although this is only a bill to move the legislature. I think that there are significant costs that haven't been put into the mill. For instance, I believe I heard most recently Ramatsu Valley turned down a request for sales tax by about a 70 to 30 vote. That sales tax was to help their infrastructure, to provide them schools, which are badly needed, and other operations. If the legislature were to move to the Matsu Valley, it would result in additional populace coming to the area to support them. That would mean a considerable amount of burden on the facilities in the Matsu Valley. Who is going to pay for those facilities? I think that they would see this as an opportunity to come back in the legislature for costs to help them through those times. I also worked for the Department of Highways and Department of Transportation and served in three different directorships and divisions in that department. Indeed, someone mentioned earlier that under Governor Egan's regime, we stood by in the Juneau area, not only on during the week, but also on weekends. I know I stood my duty on weekends at times to ensure that the legislature had easy access to us. The commissioners are appointed to run a department. They have other duties, of course, and some of those duties are to come on the Hill and testify in front of committees such as this. By moving the legislature to the Matsu Valley, the ready access to that commissioner is evident. It would mean that the commissioner would be away from his department a significant amount of the time, if not all of the time, if you're in session. And that's not a good way to run the department, particularly on a year like this year where the commissioners are new. They need to stay pretty close to the department so they can manage it. If they're not managing them, then there's a significant amount of government that's not being managed. And as a result of that, things just don't get done. In addition to that, I found at times that it, I would get a phone call at, say, 10 o'clock in the morning to get on the Hill by 10:30 or by 11 o'clock to make a presentation or to be available to answer questions to sessions such as, for a committee such as this one. If we were to provide that kind of service, if the session was in the Matsu Valley, we would have to have a significant amount of each department in that area for ready availability to the legislature. I find it another move such as boon and bust. We move a significant amount of people into the Matsu Valley for the session, and when the session is done, they move on. I'm not sure that the Matsu Valley has really, although I shouldn't perhaps care about what they, what their problems might be, but I would think that it would be of some concern to have this boon and bust, because you're going to move in literally thousands of people, I would suspect, under this bill, and I accept it that you're just going to move the legislature. But the support staff that will go with it, as well as the people that will follow, will be significant. And then come May, they move on. And in other words, another boon and bust, in although it's a smaller section of our state. A little bit, my comments have been a little bit disjointed, but nonetheless, I feel that a prime concern here is that there should be a significant amount of time spent looking at the financial aspect of this bill, and until that effort has been done, then it ought not to move out of this committee. And I thank you for the opportunity to be able to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Questions? And then thank you, sir. Joe Poor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Poor. I'm the Executive Director for the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. We, the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, are opposed to this bill, as it would result in an additional threat to our local economy. According to the Institute of Social and Economic Research, also known as ISER, which is a research organization at the University of Alaska, state spending is responsible for 46% of all economic activity in the Southeast region. I suspect that in Juneau, this percentage is even higher. The ISER report projects a decline in state revenue based on declining oil production, as it's been estimated that oil field production will decline by 70% over the next 13 years. This projection shows a steady decline in oil revenue to the state, which we believe will require the legislature to adopt a more conservative fiscal policy. If this scenario proves accurate, we anticipate a forced reduction in local state purchases, employment, and social programs. In fact, if Governor Hickel is successful in reducing the administrative cost by 5% and requiring the departments to absorb the employees' pay adjustments, Juneau will, according to Mr. Bill Overstreet, be directly impacted by a loss of as many as 250 state jobs. Some Alaska economists use a multiplier factor of 1.1 private jobs for every state job. This means that for every new state employee, the private sector will normally hire 1.1 additional employees to provide the needed goods and services and support services. Unfortunately, it also means that we can expect a corresponding decrease in private sector jobs if these industries reduce their employment. By applying the 1.1 multiplier factor, this could amount to an additional 275 lost jobs in Juneau support industries. Exactly how many local state jobs will be affected by the budget cuts remains to be seen. But you can expect that these budget cuts will either result in a decrease in state employment or a decrease in purchases made by the respective departments, or a combination of both. You must also recognize that this discussion on Hickel's administrative policy is only in the first of 4 years, and we can probably expect additional reductions in the coming years. Any significant changes to the local economy will directly impact sales tax, real and personal property tax revenues to the city and borough of Juneau. Any major reductions in income to the CBJ Treasury will result in either increased local taxes, a reduction in services, reduction in CBJ employment, or a combination of all three. Unfortunately, we also foresee a significant negative impact to our local economy based on the recently announced elimination of the federal 25% cost of living differential, which is paid to all federal employees located in the state of Alaska. This cost of living allowance benefits our community in that it results in more spendable income, which directly benefits our local economy. I have recently heard estimates by Juneau's Representative Hudson that the removal of this cost of living differential could amount to $10 million less income for existing Juneau federal employees. I believe House Bill 198 would result in either displacement of our legislative support staff that is currently supplied from within our community, or for those that choose not to leave Juneau, a loss of income and a financial threat to their families. If all of the scenarios outlined here were to become reality, the combined effect of reduced state employment, loss of the 25% cost of living differential allowance, and moving of the legislature would result in economic ruin for many of our citizens and businesses here in Juneau. The local population is still sensitive to their experiences in the mid-80s and should not be further stressed by this bill. It does not make sense for this type of legislation to be considered further, as it will only cause economic gain for one community and economic loss for another. Alaskan communities will need to work together if the projected decline becomes reality, not in opposition to each other. Current electronic communication technology utilizing satellites and computers to provide fax, modem transmissions, and the current use of teleconferencing technology is allowing better communication with your constituents than ever before. In the not-too-distant future, upcoming video telecommunications technology will allow visual communication between calling parties through the telephone system. With the new communication technology, there is no longer the imperative for a legislature to be centrally located. Our citizens can now communicate with their representatives from within their own communities, and in the future, from within their own homes. This bill appears to be self-serving for Representative Carney, without regard for the other Alaskan citizens. Please hold this bill in committee until all concerned citizens have been heard and the requested financial impact statements from the administrative departments are furnished. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Questions from the committee?
Chairman
Baker. Three quick questions. First of all,
are we still in telecom?
Yes, we are.
Three quick questions. First of all, does the chamber support the AJ mine development?
I would say as long as it's done in an economically sensitive manner, yes, sir.
Has there been any analysis what economic impact that might have on the community in terms of positive growth?
Yes, sir, there has.
And
We think that if it comes to pass that we are allowed to, or the AJ is allowed to build in Juneau, we feel that it will be enough to offset perhaps 1 year's loss in Governor Hickel's projected fiscal policy.
And the third question I have in terms of economic analysis, is it true that in Juneau that 60% of your economic activity occurs between May 15th and and September 15th?
You're relating to the fact during the period of, I'm sorry, let's go through this again.
Between May 15th and September 15th, when tourism is a major factor in this city, is it true that 60% of your annualized economic activity occurs in that 120-day period?
I've never seen anything to support that, no, sir.
Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Representative Grunberg.
Yes, Mr. Cork, what percentage of your workforce in Juneau is directly employed by state government?
I do not have those figures at my...
Maybe the mayor would be able to. Mayor, do you have that?
Mr. Chairman, it would be approximately 35%. The total government operations accounts for about 50% of the workforce, exclusive of fishing.
And what percentage of your workforce is indirectly dependent upon state government here in the city and borough of Juneau?
Mr. Chairman, I'm unable to give a particular figure, but obviously the entire service industry construction industry, housing market are all directly related to, or would be impacted by state government.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Poore. Thank you. Val Poore?
Thank you. My son is bigger than I am, so he got to speak first.
Bigger doesn't necessarily mean wiser, though.
I am Val Poore, and I am against House Bill 198, which would take the legislature out of Juneau. I have been a resident since 1936. I worked in the AJ mine. I was postmaster at Douglas 30 years. During this 50 years, Juneau has transformed itself from a mining camp to a unique modern city that some even call beautiful. Juneau has worked hard to become the capital, and we are proud of it. The threat of a capital move upsets the state as a whole, not only as a whole, but in particular, it affects Juneau, who suffers greatly in its economy. I see no benefits, but I do see an inter-Alaska conflict that for a third time will tear the state apart. Juneau was a good territorial capital in 1936, and it is a good capital city today. Let's do not pass House Bill 198. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Rosie Peterson? Peterson, you did not put your address on here. State that also, please.
I'm trying to hide. My name's Rosie Peterson. I reside at 239 West 7th in Juneau. And I'm an elected member of the City and Borough of Juneau, and I feel that I could probably speak for my constituents within the city, but also within my area, which is the downtown Douglas area. But this morning, I would like to speak as an individual, a citizen that resides within our borough, because I feel very strongly about some of the questions that I'm going to pose to the committee. And rather than to provide direct testimony this morning, I would like to give you some questions that I would like to ask you to ponder as you take a look at House Bill 198. And I had a member of my family that served for a long time with distinction in the Washington State Legislature, and he used to have a favorite saying that we've all heard before: it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it smells like a duck, then let's treat it like a duck. And so today I'm going to treat House Bill 198 as a capital move project. And what I would like to do in posing questions to you is ask you how some persons would react that are not with us this morning. First of all, how would our seniors in the state of Alaska respond to House Bill 198? Our seniors that are living here are here mainly because of the largest of you that are sitting around this table and previous legislators, and that they have seen it lies to have a longevity bonus. And for many of the seniors that I talk with in Anchorage and Fairbanks and Kotzebue, that senior longevity bonus is something that allows them to stay here. The rent program, or excuse me, the taxation program